Hello there, grandkids. It is Stunt Granny Audio 313. With me this week is Christopher. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very good, Kevin. How about yourself?
Can't argue. Little bit of show prep before here, I did not really get to watch too much Tough Enough, and really only 15 minutes of Tough Talk. So, I did seem to hear a lot of drama within that last 15 minutes.
Yeah, that last 15 minutes pretty much is all you really needed, is all you really needed to watch, honestly.
Because I had just brought the dogs back in, and I let them off their leash, and they ask, I believe it was, is it Josh, I believe, the guy with the long hair and kind of a goatee thing going on, one of the bigger guys. I don't remember what his name is, but they're like, what do you think about Patrick going home? And I'm like, holy shit. Like, so I mean, when I heard news, I heard it right away. And obviously you don't have those words come out of your mouth when it's not a surprise, at least.
Right. Yeah. Patrick went home. The theme of tonight's show, which I thought was kind of, tacked on, was humility, and Patrick showed none until after he was eliminated, and he was put in the bottom three, and voted off.
Yeah, after thinking about it for a moment, I wasn't completely surprised. Oh, nothing like sneezing on air. He was, they had pointed it out last week, like, all of the people on the panel, and I believe it was mostly in Tough Talk, about how Patrick had turned into the MMA wrestler. Or MMA fighter, as far as the attitude went, he was just holier than thou pretty much all the time. So if that continued, I'm not surprised that the audience didn't like him. He kind of was starting to get unlikable.
Yeah, it's and that's the show. It's, it's a popularity contest now, and when they brought it to an audience vote. It becomes a popularity contest. So he, over time, became the least popular guy. So he's going home.
Right. And I mean, the WWE, or pretty much any of these contests like this, have always found a way to get the people that they want back into their good graces. Whether it's because I just remember watching with my ex-wife, American Idol, and how they always, some of the good people always got cut early, but somehow they found a way to compensate for them in the long run.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure Patrick's getting a developmental deal. I mean, that's the other part of this whole thing is you're almost better off getting cut early and then going, through the right way instead of having that $250,000 target on your back where everyone's, all bitter and jealous of you and thinks you don't deserve it, and you just get run out of the locker room real quick.
Yeah, I mean, no one has really sustained anything from a Tough Enough. Maven, I would say, is probably the longest running winner from a Tough Enough?
No, it was John Morrison.
Oh, I forgot that he won.
Yeah, he was on this third season on MTV. I think, the bloom was off the rose by that point. I think, the ratings were down. So it's probably a very forgettable season.
Yeah, because I may not have just watched that altogether. Who knows? But, okay, yeah, if it was John Morrison in there, he definitely was it. But it seems like the people, again, that got cut, even The Miz in his less than productive place on the card at the current moment, he's still doing way better than either John Morrison or Maven.
right, yeah. He's certainly doing better. And, of course, the Miz season, that was the one where it was the $1 million contract, but paid off over 4 years, and so obviously $250,000 a year, and, you know, the winner, Daniel Cooter, man, you know, he was run out of off the rails real quick. I mean, so, yeah. Especially the ones where they've, you know, pumped up the money figure, those winners are really just after they get the, you know, after they get that money, it's a tough road to shore for them, or tough road ahead, or whatever, it's tough road to hoe, whatever that.
Well, you could go insulting and say that the hoes definitely had a problem with each other this week.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
No, there is no evidence on the TV show or on Tough Talk that any of them would qualify for said insult. But there certainly seemed to be a little bit of consternation from Miss Goody Two Shoes, or to Miss Goody Two Shoes, Sarah Lee, amongst the other ladies.
Yes, she grew a personality this week, without a doubt. She got an attitude, and for the most part, that's, I say, good for her. But she's gonna watch against a popularity contest, which at this point, against, you know, she's winning the, she's still, you know, she'll run away with the popularity contest.
Yes,
so,
she will.
As long as she doesn't, you know, degress herself in that regard. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where things go from here. I was kind of surprised that Georgia GG girl, she had stayed above most of the competition, and then this week she's just all up in it. I mean, you didn't see the show, but oh my goodness, she pulled up. They talked about it on the thing where she just pulled this like tour de force, like, you know, performance. You know, talking about how doing this fake crying about how she was afraid that Chelsea girl, if she had gotten in the ring with her and performed body slam, that she could have gotten her. Well, she did a little bit on Tough Talk, you would have seen, but
right.
Man, it's like she really, you know, she stayed out of the fray when the Brazilian girl who got eliminated last week it was her and the Amanda girl who were kind of the mean girl clique, and then
right
as soon as she left, you know, she jumped right in there, and it's just like, I wouldn't have done that. I would have stayed above the fray there.
Yeah, it just seems like it's a little too tempting to not stay above the fray, I guess. They just always seem to bite, and I don't quite know why.
Right, yeah, it's, I mean, I don't want to say the old cliche about all women hating each other, but it just seems like you just lock these girls in this house together, and in these barracks together, and it just, crap
yeah.
happens.
I'm trying to think of who, it was just funny that they were talking to, do you still consider yourself Gigi's sidekick? And, it's just like, well, it's certainly, I didn't see the show, but just from her reaction to the whole situation, it's just like, yeah, you're still her sidekick. That's the blonde.
Right.
Who's the blonde? Yeah, I can't remember what the blonde woman's name is.
Amanda.
Oh, okay, Amanda.
Yeah, one thing I'm kind of starting to seeing is the mixed messages as far as you know, the culture of WWE is. We want you to be confident, but not too confident. We want you to, you know, what's the, what's another? Well, I think, okay, confident but not too confident. You know, have an attitude, but don't cross the line into being too big of a dick or a bitch. You know, it's just that whole kind of permeated WWE for the last decade. It's just where we've talked about before, the talent walking on eggshells of apparently essentially not knowing how to behave from like almost week to week and day to day.
I understand wanting to have that attitude, because I just feel like even in a lot of sports, or even in the sports media in general, it's okay to have a little bit of swagger, but once you kind of cross over into being cocky, people tend to get a little bit of hate.
Yeah, and that's absolutely what happened to Patrick. It happened with him big time, but it seemed like being eliminated, you know, got him, you know, to a better place, and you know, he might be able to do well. But of course, if he wants to make it through, you know, the whole developmental NXT system, he's got to, you know, shut that mouth of his real quick, or he'll be gone very, very quickly from there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one that they haven't really mentioned how much time, and I haven't really researched it either, how much time he's been, because wasn't he in the Indies?
Yeah. He's the one who had it, who was, other than this Chelsea girl now, he's the only one who had any experience at all.
Yeah, and I guess that's one of those things that, to me, I'm surprised that he has no concept of that.
It's that whole, you hear about you walk into a locker room, you shake everyone's hand, if there's a veteran in there, you basically, you know, kiss his ass, you know, so it's kind of weird that he's the one who seemed to get it the least as far as, you know, how you should have presented yourself. But then on the other flip side, you had The Miz cutting into Tanner about losing his swagger these last few weeks and losing his cockiness. So that's more where I'm getting into it. Where it's kind of the mixed message of, you know, how exactly are you supposed to behave in this environment?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you described it perfectly. You know, they want him kind of, they do want him in some ways walking on eggshells. I think that the example you used, maybe, like, I refer to that more not in the attitude that the wrestlers bring to the ring or they even present on screen. To me, it's more of a problem backstage where we still don't really hear much about. Just because sometimes still, and I mean, I don't know if we want to use this, the transition into Raw, there's still some questionable decisions in the writing, but I'll tell you what, they do a good job of glossing over some of the writing in the last, I mean, it's been a while, honestly. Good matches overcome bad booking, writing, show running, whatever the fuck you want to call it at this point. That's the part that, to me, I refer to more of the walking on eggshells, because it just seems like they're on a whim of anything. You know, there is, oh, and you know what? The Big Show, and I was meaning to write an article on this, when he was on Chris Jericho's show, he mentioned how things aren't booked in advance really anymore. That it's mostly just booked basically week to week. And you can really tell, like him mentioning that, I think that was a comment to me that kind of ran under the radar. Because podcast is a couple of weeks old at this point.
Yeah, it was definitely, I guess I'm under the radar, but I guess a large segment of the audience for Jericho's podcast is, you know, into the whole, you know, IWC, you know, community, so they've already heard the stories about how, you know, Raw is written and rewritten pretty much that day by Vince, and what Big Show said, I mean, absolutely, I mean, confirms the fact that, you know, once again, no, there isn't as much, you know, long-term planning anymore, other than, you know, usually around this time of year, Vince finally gets in his head, okay, I know what my top three matches at WrestleMania are. Beyond that, there's really very little, you know, planning long-term going on.
Right. And even then, things are subject to change for,
yes,
even for those plans. But you're right, the WrestleMania plans maybe don't completely crystallize, but maybe you can see a bit of a picture coming to for it, say around SummerSlam here coming up.
Yes, indeed you do. And SummerSlam is definitely coming up, and they got quite the doozy of the main event.
Yeah, that is one in which...
You're totally breaking up on me here.
Oh, okay. Well, you are perfectly fine on my end. So, have I come back in here?
That's you're pixelated on my end.
And, you know, it's kind of funny, this main event for SummerSlam, it in some ways embodies what we were talking about. There are a number of places where The Undertaker could have interfered in a Brock Lesnar match and cost him the title. But it certainly seems a little suspicious that he does it to help save... Seth Rollins, although I do not think it's ever going to go there. You know, this is one of those ones that, to me, it definitely says fly-by booking, and evidently The Undertaker feels good enough that he's going to bust out a second match in 2015.
Yeah, he obviously feels good. I mean, they're going with a story that he just got tired of hearing it from Paul Heyman week after week after week, which... Fine, I'll buy that. I guess that would get annoying after a year and a half of hearing someone brag about beating you, even though you do, you know, accept the loss. That's, and I think that was the most important part, that he did say, you made it known that, you know, he accepts the loss. It streaks come and go. It happens, but what doesn't happen is someone consistently and constantly disrespecting you week after week after week. That, as a man, you do not put up with that.
Yeah. I mean, I still think that's a little bit of a bitch move on his part to do it the way that he did. I do like, honestly, after Jeremy mentioned it to me earlier today, and it was in the revised Almost Live, definitely half-assed review of WWE Raw, I like the idea of The Undertaker trying to take away the title belt from Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, I do like that. I think that, you know, taking away Brock's, you know, goal in life and his, you know... The one thing that means the world to him. Granted, I guess it kind of is very similar to the Bray Wyatt Roman Reigns storyline. You know, anyone but you, I will never allow you to, you know, achieve your dreams and all that. But yeah, it works for me. I mean, they both have their reasoning for wanting this match, and, you know, they're not going to turn either of them, you know, in any real way, so it's just, you know, whoever the audience likes more. It's just two guys looking. As I put it on Sunday night in the thread in our secret group, can't two, you know, I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't want to curse too much here, but can't two big guys just get in a fight with each other without someone trying to call them a baby face? Want to call them a baby?
Yeah, I mean, in this situation with the history, like, it's I can point out the flaws, but the overall execution of what they did was spectacular.
I mean, it was probably the best segment on Raw in years. I'd have to think about it a little bit, but you probably have to go back to the pre-3-hour area to find.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes me feel like a bitch when you complain about that, because the whole spectacle of them being pulled apart literally by the locker room, which happens once every blue moon these days. So, I mean, it really has a different impact, because it's just like, oh, okay. It was nice that they brought out the security guards first, to let them get disposed of.
Yeah, they brought in the Foot Clan, yeah. They picked their lumps before everyone ran in. And actually, look, the last time they did a big pull apart angle, it was actually Lesnar and Cena before Extreme Rules 2012. And this blew that away, because only one guy in that scenario did I really believe was in a fight for his life, that being Lesnar, not Cena. And then this one, they both just were like, I mean, I talked to a very casual fan friend of mine today. He's just like, because he doesn't watch Raw, but I showed him the clips from YouTube. It's just like, that was like the most real looking thing I've ever seen in wrestling, in watching wrestling. It just, I mean, when a man is yelling, I'm going to kill you, and the other guy yells back, you're going to have to. I mean, it's on.
Yeah, there was that. I did love the positioning of R-Truth is the voice of reason backstage.
Oh, yeah. That was his moment. He was going to Bogart that scene. Totally. Hilarious. It's like, maybe in real life, Lesnar and Truth are friends. I mean, the timing might line up for them to have been in the OVW together. So, it's like one of those things, like Truth almost forgot where he was and just started like, come on, Brock, buddy. It was like, no.
Well,
like, you're all crazy.
I think it helps that he's played the crazy character. So, I mean, that kind of feeds into it, too. Like, he was definitely kind of that crazy guy I think someone described it as the drunk guy that thinks they have control of the situation.
Yeah.
And really, it was
Dan Huster.
Yeah, that was a perfect description of just the way they, it would be something that R-Truth would try to do and think that he's capable of doing it with the current incarnation of his character. But right, you also know that he's completely out of his league in doing so, which...
Yeah, that does make sense, yeah. But yeah, no, the whole thing was tremendous. Now the key is not to get bogged down in creative. And luckily with these two, they probably shouldn't be in the same building, at least until the last Raw before SummerSlam. You do your video packages, Heyman talking that smack, and that's it, and just replay this over and over. I mean, you don't get too cute with this.
Yeah, and they probably won't. I mean, just because they are both limited appearance guys, I don't see them now, just because of this match, hitting four straight Raws until SummerSlam.
That's not going to happen. They should alternate weeks which one's there. Maybe Undertaker doesn't even need to show up to any Raw, because obviously the in-ring promo isn't his forte. And he did fine. And I know you didn't like his promo at the beginning of Raw at all, but for what he does, when he has to go long to explain something in detail, it was fine for him. He's better in when the booming voice comes from the heavens and he has to speak in sound bites. That's all he'll need for the next couple of weeks at least.
Right. I mean, he's already done more for this build-up than he did for the entire Bray Wyatt versus The Undertaker build-up.
What a mistake that was. You know, in total, just... Maybe not even in hindsight, maybe even at the time, but, oh, man, that just... Maybe they just should have gone with this at WrestleMania, but it's good to have it for SummerSlam, because they do need something for SummerSlam. They really are, you know... They want this to be one of the, you know, maybe the biggest SummerSlam in a long time, and it very likely is going to be. I mean, it's be interesting with the network model being what it is. That, you know, are they, you know, missing out on the opportunity to have a, you know, 500,000 to 750,000, you know, buy show, you know, at $60 a pop, versus, you know, the network, which is still going to be free during the month of August, which is an interesting decision. I mean, once again, it's that whole, you know, entice people with this and hope they stay into September. I mean, if it's gonna be free and they're already at 1.1 to 1.3, somewhere in there, probably closer to about 1.1, I'd probably, has been the estimation I've read. I can't imagine there not being. By that day, there could be 2 million subscribers. Granted, nearly half of them are there for free, but, you know, maybe it would be a gamble that'll pay off.
Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting in that respect. I don't really. I guess I still just don't understand. Like. Yeah, I guess I just don't understand at all. Like, if someone hasn't joined up at this point, I don't know why a free month would entice them. I mean, there is not like their ratings continue to go up, and you're like, oh, well, there are more viewers.
There are people still discovering Netflix out there. There really are. There are people still discovering Hulu, and then you've got, you know, both HBO and Showtime have their, you know, relatively new, you know, services. For that, they do offer. It's been less than a year and a half total. It's not that long in this. I don't think in this you know, streaming industry. I mean, Netflix still offers a 30-day trial, so it's not that big of a deal. But of course, it's a different thing because you're offering something, you know, live and something that used to be a major event that people paid $60 for and gathered together with their friends and did so, and now they don't?
No, not really. They just watch it on their computer and type to other friends while they watch it at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I guess, the other problem with the network. It's not like if you had, you know, a household that was, you know, every month filled with 10 people.
One second.
Because the household that used to have 10 people come over to watch a pay-per-view, to me, all 10 of those people are not subscribed to the network. Just the one guy who always hosted the party is subscribed to the network, paying
right
less than a fifth of what he used to, and everyone's still going over to his house because they don't need the network as long as he's got it.
Well, you know, most of the people that did used to come to the DeFrango household for the pay-per-views have moved out of the fine city of Columbus and into various regions. And I'm pretty sure that they don't have the network, and they're still not coming over, that's for sure.
Yeah. They say most grown-ups grow out of wrestling, but obviously that does not apply to you and me.
Well, I mean, I think there are plenty of people in our bracket that continue to watch.
I know there are.
And again, like, a lot of good wrestling has masked a lot of bad writing. And that's definitely made things very enjoyable. in the WWE, just in general. Like, even when there's something to complain about, again, we can go back to someone like John Cena pretty much putting on a spectacular match week in and week out for the last, 3 months since WrestleMania?
Yeah, it's going on 4 months now that he's U.S. champion, which is, and he's just, maybe not necessarily this week, but he's consistently week in and week out been the best thing on the show, and his matches have been pretty great, and yeah. What did you think about, this kind of switch gears, what did you think about the Owens loss?
It's all in the follow-up. I mean, and that's where a lot of people have been in this weird limbo, because there isn't really any established mid-card, you know, to put them over, to kind of put them in the upper echelon. Like, they have, because even, Bray Wyatt ends up having to face all the other young guys for the most part, and then The Undertaker. And I guess you can put John Cena in that category too, where Taker and Cena were the only two big names that Wyatt took on, but everyone else he's taken on, even when he, I keep on forgetting that Chris Jericho was in there too for Wyatt.
I didn't want to correct you, but yeah.
Feel free.
That started that kind of the downhill slide for the Wyatt character. Just that Jericho feud that went nowhere, that had no reason behind it, because they couldn't come up with a reason. So the best they could do was have Wyatt, speaking in his riddles week in and week out, and that has kind of been the story of the Wyatt character until maybe the last few weeks. I think that there is something. Now, this Reign story now finally has some meat behind it, and I think that this is, for Wyatt, it's definitely the right way to go with it.
Well, yeah, again, as they put it in the review, I really did not pay that much attention to Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt's promo per se, but it was essentially them going, why the fuck did you break us up? Like, why did you not realize this was a good thing? Like, I understand the whole want to be a single star situation, but they had it. They had a tag team with a single leader that made sense.
Yeah, absolutely. The breaking them up was a horrible decision. Thankfully, they're rectifying it, although poor Eric Rowan does not get to be a part of it for maybe 4 to 6 months, so they're probably likely going to have to find a sixth man. I mean, a third man, so that they can go through with what's expected to be the six man tag at SummerSlam. Should I spoil the speculation for those listening who will be joining Reigns and Ambrose at SummerSlam or not?
Did they announce it on SmackDown already?
No. It's gonna be. They're gonna play this. The storyline's gonna play out. That's what I'm over several weeks. But it's pretty well. Just believe that. Screw it. I'll just say it. Who the heck is listening? Who isn't a smart mark?
Well, I haven't paid attention to the speculation at a minimum, but I don't. It's not gonna spoil my viewing either.
It's gonna be. Sting will be joining with.
Oh, okay. I guess I just saw Sting with Reigns, and I kind of forgot about that. That thing.
But I mean, I guess the real speculation is, I mean, who are they going to get to kind of join the new kind of patch together Wyatt family for now? I mean, there's a few people in NXT that fit the look. I mean, Bull Dempsey, although he's doing his, his fat ass gimmick, who can't eat, so, but I don't think he can always fall in from that. I mean, if they want to just go with Baron Corbin, maybe that'd be a good place for him.
Yeah, you know, it was kind of funny. I liked, Mr. Mays passing along some information that I found amusing, or at least that could work for me. What's it? Bo Dallas joining his brother.
That'd be interesting. That, and you know what? He has been beaten up a lot. You know, he has been a punching bag for Reigns and Ambrose, you know, over the time. He's kind of like the jobber of choice for guys on the rise just to destroy.
So, yeah, and I mean,
it'd be interesting to see if he actually probably gets my vote.
Yeah, I just think that they're too enamored with the Bo Leave part of the character, and to me, if he joins the family, he's definitely got to alter that. But he has such a great hateability to him.
Yeah, I mean, he could almost join them as the odd member out. He might almost be able to make it work with him still in the Bo Leave shtick. In fact, it'd be just so ridiculous that they probably should just go ahead and do it.
So good it's bad kind of a situation, huh? Is what you're going with for that one. Oh, man. Well, yeah. To me, you end up, if you're going to bring Sting in for the good guys, you've got to get somebody that has a little bit of clout on the heel side. Just because, to me, Bray Wyatt is not any higher on the totem pole than either Dean Ambrose or Roman Reigns.
Yeah. But interestingly, Wyatt and, by extension, Luke Harper, Reigns and Ambrose were all above playing the role of guys breaking up Undertaker and Lesnar, but Kevin Owens was not. you had your protected guys who were not, you did not go out there for that. You know, Cena, Orton, you know, Ryan, Reigns, Ambrose. Those were pretty much the guys who were protected from having to be, you know, geeks getting pushed around and you know, failing to keep these two apart. I think Big Show was even, you know, kept out of that mix. But interestingly, Kevin Owens was not seen as being someone that they are going to protect from being lumped in with everyone else.
Well, I don't think, I hope that doesn't portend anything, because they certainly put him in a huge spot, and he delivered in every possible way, both on the mic and in the ring. But it's also one of those, you were kind of talking about it, being respectful. No matter how long he's been around wrestling, and it's been an awful long time, he's still new to the WWE.
Right, yeah. I mean,
so I can see putting him in that position just to, like you said, they want you to have an ego, but not too much of an ego. Maybe after, you know, this big push here to start things off and getting signed to the roster really quicker than what? Anybody else on NXT?
Yeah, absolutely quicker, yeah.
So, you know, maybe this is a way to at least keep them in check or keep things in perspective a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, because I could still see him ending up with the U.S. title, especially if, you know, Cena's going to move on back into the world title chase. You could very easily do jumping into another match again, Raw, I guess. But you could easily do have Owens, you know, answer an open challenge and then have Rollins cost Cena the U.S. title, and then Owens can kind of, I guess you would say, rule the mid card to a certain degree as the U.S. champion.
Oh, right.
You know, stand atop the mid card. You know that, you know, kind of peeking into the top of the card at least for now.
Yeah, I guess it'll be interesting, because they didn't really set a lot of stuff up yesterday. Like, it was a good show, but outside of maybe saying Cena and Rollins, although you could definitely argue that Rollins still put enough emphasis on Kane that he's a very real possibility for a feud.
I think that's going to be down the line, though. I mean, obviously, they didn't have Cena, you know, interrupt him for no reason, so they are going to go with that match, likely at SummerSlam. So, but, yeah, I mean, Kane coming back and, you know, fully masked to go after Rollins, that's pretty much going to happen. I imagine at some point, maybe in the fall. But, no, I mean, I guess it was earlier, I was kind of going through, like, the card for SummerSlam, or what we know, you know, obviously, Undertaker versus Lesnar, Cena versus Rollins, you know, this perceived, you know, likely six-man with, you know, the Wyatt family against the new Shield, however you put it, and then, you know, something with the women, and then it's like, I went through the list of everyone else who would need to, like, be on, like, in the card, you know, it's like, okay, I'll run through right now since we got time.
Orton, go with it, man, I'm not arguing.
Orton, Sheamus, Owens, Ryback, Big Show, Dolph, Rusev, Cesaro's getting put into the mix. Yeah, there's 8 guys right there. And even if you throw in, like, Miz, which is still part of the Intercontinental feud, with might just throw him out of there. It's like 8 or 9 guys who they have to work into SummerSlam somehow in, you know, three or four matches.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some of those guys are going to be involved in tag team and or larger scale matches.
Right. Because when you make your main event a special attraction with 2 part-timers, that's one less match set for the full-timers to have. So, yeah, you're going to combine some. I'd like to see, you know, Owens versus Cesaro in a singles match, maybe for the U.S. title. I think that would be great. That's, you know, a good, you know, 10-12-minute match at SummerSlam. But I got a feeling at least, you know, three or four, you know, 1 or 2 other guys are going to end up, you know, possibly in that situation.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be some type of ladder match or some type of gimmick match to get some of those guys. Because I said tag match earlier, and there is always that type of possibility where it's a multi-singles match.
Right, yeah, I can see some stuff like that, because they also had, well, who knows, maybe they'll even go with, like, 6-way, 8-way, something, you know, something kind of crazy, or because... You know, all the guys in that mix have over the last couple of weeks have been messing with each other in some way. You know, they've had tag matches and singles matches and, you know, multi-way matches there. So I could absolutely see, you know, some kind of big, you know, big match there, because you even had the heels, you know, fighting each other. So that's I believe that there might be some kind of, like, big every man for himself type brawl. I mean, they've gone to ladders. I think enough this year that maybe that won't be where they go with it. And obviously, they already did an elimination chamber back in May, so they're not going to bring that back again. So, but I can see it being something where you get a lot of guys in one match, because they're all kind of feuding with each other right now.
Right. And yeah, and I wasn't minding doing these segments rapid fire on Raw here, so I'm going to keep on moving along. You brought them up. The ladies actually got 2 matches this week, and 2, I did not time them per se, but I would say 2 fairly lengthy matches.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, they're getting their chance. Maybe it's not what some people hope the quote-unquote revolution would be, but it's what it has to be with all the masters that need to be served. You know, think that I think the tag match was really good with Sasha and Naomi against Paige and Becky. I really liked that a lot. I thought Charlotte and Brie was okay, but not even quite good. I thought it was clumpy in spots, and not just because of Brie, but you know, two people who've never worked together before, and you know, learning each other. You know, it takes time for things like that, and
Yeah, and in that department, Paige, Sasha, and Becky worked a lot more together than Naomi did in that match. So it helped that Paige was down in NXT. She's worked with some of these other ladies at least a little bit, I would imagine, in training. Because it didn't, at least as far as I understand, did not occur that much on screen.
Right, no. I mean...
But she's got to be...
I mean, she was the Divas champion on the main roster by the time Charlotte, Becky, and Sasha started coming into their own. But I mean, obviously they crossed paths, they know each other, they train together. I think they had a few matches on TV, and you know, so yeah, they know each other. They'll definitely be more familiar with each other. So I'm sure you know they'll work well together. And I mean, it's going to be a process. It's going to be smart people are wanted this to be like something immediate, and it just can't be that. I mean, the WWE audience just doesn't accept people, you know, that immediately unless. Well, granted, maybe that's wrong because I'm actually thinking about plenty of times, just most recently Kevin Owens, that you know that. If you do something big, the audience will respond to it accordingly. And maybe they haven't said anything quite big yet. I mean, the problem is it's the whole group war thing with no one individually standing out. Although you know Charlotte and Sasha did get you know the wins in their tag in their matches this week, but I definitely want to see more individualism and more individual stars breaking out.
Yeah, and I just think that they're kind of committed to the groups of three, at least through SummerSlam.
Yeah, it seems that way. It does. And so hopefully that will work out well, and they'll be able to move on from it.
Yeah, I think they should be able to. I mean, it just all boils down to just giving them that amount of time. Like, I just don't feel like they had, even after the first Give Divas a Chance kind of popped up, I don't know, what, 6-8 months ago or so? They kind of gave them a chance for about a month, and then things died off.
Right, yeah, but I mean... This won't be that because this truly is Triple H and Stephanie's baby. This is you know this is Stephanie's woman empowerment you know story. You know this is about Stephanie as much as if not more than it's about any of these girls. So Stephanie wants to stand in the middle of you know a women's empowerment seminar and be able to declare that you know she made women's wrestling you know big. So this can't fail. This can't be just swept under the rug in a matter of weeks.
Yeah. I guess I still am not going to believe it until I see it over a sustained time frame. But, you know, you've got to start somewhere, and to me, this is a good somewhere to start.
Right. Yeah, it absolutely is. You know what? I think they had a good two nights. I think that you know, I think there were probably people out there you know who were being probably unjustly hard on Brie Bella. I thought she worked very hard and worked very well, especially in the triple threat from Sunday. So,
yeah. I mean, I've always liked her work more than Nikki's, honestly. So that's kind of amusing. Yeah, her and Charlotte didn't have the greatest match, but again, they weren't all that familiar with each other, And it was designed to get over the figure eight, and they got over that move. I mean, they continue to get over that move.
Yeah, that move's gonna get obviously it's gonna get it over pretty big. You know, Charlotte has the built-in woo chance from the crowd. So I mean, she'll probably break out from the pack before anyone else. If I had to guess, she will be the one to take the Divas Championship from Nikki.
Well, things are still in that weird spot with all the women hating each other, for the most part. But to me, it's more three babyface divas and six heel divas is what the equation is at the current moment.
I'm not sure on that, because, I mean, okay, Team Paige is obviously all babyface.
Right.
Team BAD is, Sasha, Naomi, and Tamina. They're heels when they're against Team Paige, but when they're against Team Bella, they're the faces. So it's a weird dynamic there.
Well, see, and I guess I don't think that that's even the case, though, because the time that they just had the feud recently, they really tried to make Naomi and Tamina babyface again so that she could have a shot at Nikki's title. So, yeah, and that's just another thing that some of that writing that we talked about earlier where it's a little wonky, they need to solve that for the women or else it is going to end up being a bit of a disaster.
Right. Yeah. It really needs to be, everyone needs to pick a side of the fence and stick to it. You had Nikki Bella on commentary during the tag match, giving her little women's lib, rah-rah speech. It's like, you're not the one who should be giving this speech. It should be the others. In fact, I'm I don't know if you listen to this, Steve Austin's show with Wade Keller yet, but Wade made the point, stop saying this is a revolution and just start showing it. They're saying it too much.
Well, I don't know about that. Again, just because it's still, I wouldn't be saying it needs to have a longer shelf life if it didn't just start. I think it's worth mentioning still. I think that if they're still saying that there's a revolution, let's say past Survivor Series. I'm going to give it a little more time than past SummerSlam. If they're still going with that gimmick, it's Survivor Series time, then I can buy that argument. Until then, we just know that Wade doesn't like women anyway, so...
my goodness. Oh. You're gonna get it from Travis tomorrow, man.
Well, if he actually listens, I'll be more than happy. I guess I just think that it's a little early to have that opinion, quite honestly. Because, again, it just started last week. Like, they just brought the NXT Divas out last week.
Right.
This has been a one-week thing at this juncture. A whole 7 days. Like, you can't... you can't not talk about it. They didn't have, like, that... the revolution in Egypt and just go, oh, yeah, that thing where they're throwing over the government in Egypt... it's just like, so you're not supposed to mention a revolution even though there is a revolution going on? Like, did the Americans not talk about the American Revolution when it was going on? I guess I don't quite. Well, and yeah, maybe I'm getting a little deeper than I want to at this current moment.
I absolutely get your point, but I get your point, but it probably shouldn't be the heels standing up for all the women's rights. You know, that's the element that's like Nikki Bella should not be the voice. Well, I mean, you could literally hear, you know, the words of Stephanie McMahon, you know, like, you know, in her ear as she was saying the things that she was saying. It's like we were just talking about to get this back on track.
Well, and even you did bring that point up, and it just kind of cracked me up how Stephanie McMahon was congratulating Becky Lynch backstage after her first match on Raw. And it almost seemed like Stephanie was more in the picture than Becky was. So, yeah, and again, to kind of go to your point that, you know, it's her baby, she's going to invest in it, I'm not really disagreeing with that aspect of it. But, again, it needs to be a sustained thing. And I think it'd work. Like, I don't know any reason it wouldn't. It's not going to be the main thing on Raw still, I don't think, especially when you have something like Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker happening.
Yeah, it's...
But, you know, I think that there is money out there. And, I mean, the WWE's trying to diversify and they're going to other countries, to me, more often than they used to, and they're trying to get into those markets. And I mean, I just think that if they want to play to all the markets that they can, they need to have more women in ring action.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Yeah, it's good for them to diversify. I think that this has been this opportunity to be a pretty, you know, big thing. Like, will women ever main event in WWE, like a pay per view? I don't know if I ever see that. Could it be higher on the card than it is? Yeah, absolutely it could. I mean, WrestleMania. Once again, WrestleMania to me is going to be it's probably the real test. Do they pick the two best women and let them have, you know, 10-15 minutes, or do they put them all in the ring together and give them five?
Yeah, and that real test is really a long time off. Like, they will have had a sustained push if we're having this discussion next March.
Right. Exactly.
So I don't think the Divas will be in trouble if we get to that point one way or the other, even if they do end up giving them the short end of the stick. So, I don't know. Were there any other big moments on Raw that we didn't cover? Like, I think we got most of them.
I think we're good with Raw.
Okie doke. Oh, you know what? We didn't get one part.
Oh, boy.
I think I need to reframe or ask you about the sympathetic Rusev situation.
He never gives up. He is so brave and so... In every situation, the odds are against him, and he perseveres at each and every week. He's a hero in my eyes.
because I combine
that with the whole Bulgarian Playboy act, and it's just he's just a delight to watch.
Oh, well, being a delight to watch is to me wholly different than being sympathetic. Because I thought that what he did to Lana this week was complete dick move. Like, I don't think that anyone in this storyline looks good at all.
there's something to that, yeah. But
Rusev and
Rusev is doing the best performance. The others are doing really bad acting. He is actually really good in his role. So that's where he gets a lot of the praise.
Okay, yeah. Again, I can buy that. He's still not sympathetic. Well, he was sympathetic only in and of the fact that he was still a bit of a dick at the end of that main event on Raw, because unlike previously, he did kind of stay down injured a little bit longer than he used to in the past. And I do think that it's helping the character, but that does not make him sympathetic to me. If he's kind of lollygagging on the outside and not up on the apron for his tag team partner to tag him.
He was left with three men, and he fought valiantly. And if it wasn't for that witchy woman, Lana, I think he would have beaten all three of them.
Okie dokie. Well, then, I will assume that you're still under the influence of the many beers that you had this past weekend.
Oh, man.
Now, did you go to 11 breweries or just 11 brew pubs over the 11, course?
It was 11 brew pubs. Okay. 11 brew pubs. It's a brew pub. Kalamazoo, Michigan, a huge brew pub town. Did 11 in under 24 hours. I mean, that's having like either one drink or, you know, trying samplers at each, not spending all that long at any bar except for the ones that we ate at.
Right.
But, you know, so actually the end result of my weekend adventure was not so much being drunk. It was just right to my stomach, just feeling so full and bloated. Oh, man.
It does get a little tough. And the column came out for the first part of the bachelor party there for me in Pittsburgh. And we did four breweries in a day. And I'll tell you what, by the time we reached the fourth one, I was kind of tapped out.
Yeah.
I had tried a lot of beer. I had enjoyed a lot of beer, but it was a little rough getting to that fourth one and having even more beer.
Yeah, for me at least there was time in between like each bar. I didn't really drink more than one pint at each bar, so it helped. I mean, it's definitely an interesting experience, something I'm glad I did. There's a lot of restaurant and bar, you know, brew pubs, and there's, you know, obviously Bell's is the biggest in the state of Michigan, pretty much. Didn't go to their like brewery, went to their cafe, which is more in downtown Kalamazoo.
Okay.
It's actually I don't know if anyone wants to hear my Yelp review of Bell's Eccentric Cafe or not, but the beer is still fine, but their food service leaves a lot to be desired, especially since if anyone out there listening has ever been there, they've changed it completely, literally just in the last 2 weeks. So everything, the way that they do everything.
Well, I will have to remember that. It was Kalamazoo was under consideration for the mini honeymoon after the wedding here.
Oh, really? You should definitely. Yeah, I mean,
because there are also wineries in that area.
Yeah, we didn't do any of the wineries, but yeah, there's plenty of stuff, and you know, and there's plenty of things for the beer and overall alcohol enthusiast in Kalamazoo. I would absolutely recommend you getting one of these bad boys here. it's a passport that you can grab from where I grabbed it was this place called Tim's, one of the microbreweries we went to, which is, you know, like really, you know, really small bar, like where it's literally like just one guy downstairs brewing everything, you know, the owner of the place.
Nice.
So you go there, you get your passport, and you just go to the bar, you order at least, you know, one drink, and they'll stamp your passport for you, just like you're traveling the world. You're traveling the world of Michigan beer.
Yeah, there is something similar here. It's called the C-Bus Ale Trail. So it has some, yet not all, of the breweries that are in town, which is kind of ridiculous. Because there are just too many at this juncture, in a good way. I mean, I'm glad that you got your passport stamped. My beverage of the evening tonight. I'm almost done with the Mount Carmel 12 pack. This time, ooh man, yeah, and you heard the burp directly from the beer. Blonde ale today. It's a very nice, crisp, clean, clovey enough blonde ale. So, again, very good company out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Tasty beer. I wish I would have gone down to that job site when they were actually open.
Right.
That kind of sucked to miss it by about an hour. I should have left later in the morning. Damn me.
Oh. You'll get it next time, champ.
Okie dokie. For at Chris Calamita, for at DeFrango11, and for the brand at Stunt Granny, this has been Stunt Granny Audio 313. We hope you have had a good listen.
Later.